And welcome back once again. The foreign-born population of our region is about 4.5%. The number of those who have chosen to become citizens over the last decade numbers in the thousands. But the numbers show that naturalized citizens, that is, are about a third less likely than the native-born to vote in elections. We wondered why, and also how they view the entire process from naturalization to participation in elections. Joining me in studio to discuss it, Anita Barker, Vice President and Director of Education for the International Institute. The Institute offers citizenship classes for immigrants, which stress voting rights. Also with us is Cuban-born Elena Fernandez. She is a student at Webster University who came to this country in 2004. She became a naturalized citizen in 2010 after attending citizenship class at the International Institute. Thank you so much, both of you ladies, for being with us.
Thank you.
Anita, let me begin with you. Why do you think voting turnout is so low amongst the naturalized citizens among us?
Mm-hmm. Good question. Anecdotally, I know that many of our naturalized citizens struggle with some of the same issues that keep native-born citizens from voting, transportation issues, job schedules. For the population we work with, of course, it's also the added challenge of limited English and limited understanding of the candidates. It's overwhelming to be an informed citizen in this country. For those who become naturalized and lack literacy skills, it's even more overwhelming and challenging.
In the classes, though, that you provide at the Institute, do you detect a real enthusiasm for being a part of the process, or do you detect more concerns and reticence to become involved?
Oh, I would say I see a lot of enthusiasm. I've substitute taught and have been at the Institute for many years, have had the opportunity to work with students, and they're excited. They're excited about the opportunity, eager to learn. A little apprehensive, I think. Some of them worry about making the wrong choice because they're not able to be as informed as other people. Overall. And the other thing I've witnessed a lot of interest in and appreciation for visits from elected officials at certain events. We have the annual Thanksgiving for New Americans celebration at the Institute, and we occasionally have elected officials there. And I think they appreciate that opportunity to see face-to-face someone who seems to care about them.
Elena Fernandez, give us your perspective on that. You've gone through this process. Have you voted yet?
Oh, no. This is going to be my first year voting.
But you plan to vote.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'm very excited about it. I cannot wait.
Do you? I'm sure that you associate with others who, like you, have come to this country in recent years. What do they tell you about becoming involved or not becoming involved?
Well, I think it's a little bit challenging because we're getting out there and being exposed. And we can get exposed to be our documents double-checked or going into being like racist profiling and stuff like that.
Are you talking about at home? You're going through that process at home or here?
No, not at home. I'm talking more about like the going out there and going to vote. It could be a little bit intimidating to go out and say, I'm going to go to this place and I'm going to get in and I'm going to vote. I think that's a little bit intimidating.
What do you recall about the voting process in Cuba before you left?
Well, I was underage, so I was not even allowed to vote. And I don't remember much. I just remember people going to vote and I saw the voting place and the flag, but I don't know what they voted for.
How about the campaigning here? What is your view of it? You've been here for a few years now. You were here in 2008, but not a citizen yet. And you watched that election campaign. You watched it in 2010, and you're watching it this year. What are your impressions about what we go through?
Well, I've seen a lot of negative campaign, and I think that could be like seen not so good on both parts because we get to see the negative about one, but then we feel like this person is not acting right by showing the negative of the other one. And that's how I feel, you know, like, but it's good that they show the negative because that helps make a decision. And, you know, you just have to take it, and sometimes it's a little too much when you have 5 minutes of commercials and 5 of those minutes is voting and all that campaign and stuff.
Does it turn people off to the point where they would decide not to vote? They just get tired of it?
I don't know. I think it will depend on the person.
Nita, how about you? What are you hearing along those lines with regard to, I mean, it's a new experience for a lot of people who come from places where there may not be any voting at all, you know, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my feeling is that people have to feel the connection. They have to really believe that, and I think this is true for native-born as well. You know, what is going to take to motivate someone to get out to the polls despite the weather, despite the transportation, despite the job schedule juggling or dealing with children after school? You know, all of those issues, what is it going to take to motivate someone to go vote? They're going to have to really believe that their vote is going to make a difference, that choosing an elected official or choosing a certain candidate or voting for a particular proposal is going to directly impact their lives.
Does the Institute have any kind of a program, a kind of get-out-the-vote program for graduates from your classes, for instance?
A very good question. We currently have a grant, a two-year grant from the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services. In our first year of the grant, a couple years ago, one of the components was a voter registration voter workshop for newly graduated, newly naturalized citizens. And it was an opportunity to show them even just how to deal with the voting ballot process. In this round, there wasn't an opportunity to include a component like that. So it's addressed in the citizenship preparation classes, not to the full-blown way that it was in that workshop. So that's unfortunate. But we do encourage the students, you know, and they're excited. I mean, of course, the students in citizenship preparation classes aren't naturalized yet. Some are very eager to pass in time to be able to vote. But in general, I think there is enthusiasm.
We're really talking about enough people that could make a difference in some of our elections.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the issue of a responsibility. They learned this, that one of the responsibilities only allowed by a naturalized citizen or required, not required, but a responsibility expected of a naturalized citizen or a native-born citizen is voting. They learn that. They understand that. That's one of the questions they get asked during the interview. But, you know, it's not a responsibility like if you fail to pay your taxes, you're going to have a personal penalty for that. So they watch their neighbors. They see that native-born citizens are not voting at the rates that perhaps all of us would wish. Though I did read in the Beacon, I think, wasn't it, I think 71% of native-born voted in the 2008 election and 60-some percent of naturalized citizens. So I was pleased to see that statistic. I actually expected lower, but I was glad to see that.
Are you surprised that I don't want to say so few, but roughly half of Americans don't vote? Does that surprise you?
A little, because, come on, you have the opportunity to make the choice of who's going to represent you in the future and who's going to take the hand and do the job that is supposed to be get done in order for the country to get better. And we're not taking that choice. We're not taking that responsibility seriously enough. And people are not going to vote. So what are you going to expect?
Well, you've got to talk more to people then. We've got to get those numbers up. As one of our guests previously said, that half the people are just saying no to everything because they don't vote at all and don't get involved. Mm-hmm. Give me some sense, if you would, as to what it meant to you to become an American citizen.
It meant everything. It means I'm going to be here forever. That means I'm going to stay here, and I get to choose who is going to be the president of the United States.
How difficult a process is it to take that step?
Well, I was very glad that I took the citizenship class at the International Institute. That make it a lot easier. And the process was, it took probably like a couple months from the fingerprints to get done with the interview and all the process and everything that goes behind that. But it was good.
Do you have to have a sponsor or someone behind you and kind of taking your hand to make this happen?
Well, the International Institute helped me with the classes and getting prepared for it. But no, I just pay for it and that was it.
Anita, what is that process like? Mm-hmm. I mean, you just don't land on our shores and say, I want to be a citizen and become one.
Right. So a person has to be a lawful permanent resident for 5 years before they are eligible to be interviewed, to have the interview for naturalization, or 3 years if they're married to an American citizen. It's expensive. It's $680 to apply. A person has to fill out the 10-page application, which asks a lot of questions about personal information, information about the children, job history during the last 5 years, resident, you know, where you've lived the last 5 years, questions about moral character. It's a lot that goes into it. A person has to understand the information that's being asked of them to complete the application and then be prepared to answer questions during the English test at the interview, which is going to do verification of the information on the N-400 form as well as test that person's English. And that's probably the most challenging part in addition to the 100 questions that they have to study for civics.
Alina, was this an intimidating process for you?
Yes, it was. When I got to the interview, I was intimidated by the person first. Because, you know, it's like you're nervous. You're coming from, I learned all my 100 questions, and I know what I wrote down on my application, so I should know my life, right? But it still is a little scary to go in, and you feel intimidated, and they go through the whole interview with asking you all the questions on the paperwork that you fill out, and they ask you the 10 questions, and they ask you to write. But I was glad to did it and to get done with it, and I'm happy to go and vote.
Do we make it too tough on people like you to be able to make that step?
I guess not. It just depends. You have to learn your American history, which it was good for me because I already had some American history through high school and stuff like that. And I think it's good, and I think some Americans should learn their 100 questions too.
Well, I'm sure you know more American history than a lot of Americans know about Cuba. I would venture that to be true. Anita, how about that question? Do we make it too tough, or should it be tougher?
I think one of the challenges that people face is first the cost, as I mentioned. You know, $680 for someone who is typically working a low-wage job, maybe one or two jobs, plus having children, it's a lot to save money up for. There is a fee waiver in place now. The United States government has a form that people can fill out, and if they receive means-tested benefits or have 150% below poverty, they're able to qualify for that fee waiver. And there are some scholarship opportunities in the community to help them. You know, for special populations, such as those who come to this country never having had formal education in their own language, a lot to learn. Often the people that fail the test are people we find out too late have already applied, and they just did not make enough time or, you know, understand how much time it would take for them to learn the English language skills, the oral listening and speaking and reading and writing skills, and as well as the civics questions that they'll have to be able to answer to pass the interview. The older population is a challenged population. People who come here, there is an English language exemption for people who are 50 years or older, but they have to have lived in the United States for 15 or more years. So if you can imagine a refugee coming to this country in their 60s, there is that high stakes because SSI, supplementary income, is going to be maxed out at 7 years. And until if they cannot become naturalized after 7 years, they'll lose that income. So there's high stakes, and an older person, it's going to be harder and take longer for an older person to learn the skills that they need to pass.
Alina, did you come here alone? Are you alone? Did you have other family that's going through this process with you?
No, I came with my family, and my mom is taking the classes now to pass the citizenship test.
And is she excited about that?
Yes. She's a little bit scared and nervous because her English is limited, and that's probably what is stopping her a little bit.
We have a few minutes left. I'll open up the phone lines. If folks want to get into this conversation, we'll be happy to take some calls. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. And if you'd like to send us an email, do so at talk@stlpublicradio.org. Send us a tweet at STL on air or reach us through Facebook. Alina, let me ask you how welcoming the community has been to you. Have you felt welcomed?
It depends. Sometimes. I just make myself welcome, which is different. Sometimes people look at you with attitudes and people don't respect or they don't know what you went through or how hard it is to learn a new language. And they sometimes don't want to understand what you're saying, even though you're speaking English.
How was your English when you came here?
I knew three words. Door, teacher, and window. Not that you could help anybody because you cannot get anything done with doors, teacher, and window.
We have so much respect for people who do come to a strange land and you know, have to start essentially from square one. Mm-hmm. Anita, we did a program here not too long ago on the fact that St. Louis is recruiting refugees, if you will, and immigrants, because they are so industrious and they actually help the economy so much. Is this something that you've run into or had experience with?
Recruiting, not me personally, but, you know, certainly we're a refugee resettlement agency, and the International Institute provides a wide range of services to new Americans. So in many ways, we are a magnet. We have affordable housing here and opportunities for employment that attract people. But I don't know about recruiting. I'm sorry, a heavy recruitment campaign.
I understand. But rest assured and trust me that this is happening, that they're really seeking out people from all over the world
to come here and
bring their talents with them, of course. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Diana wants to join us from Crestwood, so let's bring her into the conversation. Go ahead, Diana.
Yes, hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I worked with a program, a nonprofit in the area, for about a year, and I ran a citizenship program there and a volunteer program, working with asylees and refugees from all over the world. And a lot of the people had a lot of difficulty with preparing for the citizenship exam, just like your guest mentioned. They don't have any formal education in their country. So I worked with a lot of elderly women from Afghanistan, Iraq, and Kurdistan, and they could not read or write in their own language. So I just wanted to share that it is definitely a challenging process, but they really desire to become American citizens, and they love this country very much.
Mm-hmm. Anita, you're nodding in affirmation there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Take another call from East St. Louis. Max will join us. Go ahead, Max.
Yes, thanks, Don, for taking my call. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I just wanted to applaud the courage and the vigor of the people who come to this country, abide by the rules, learn the language, and are really stand-up citizens. And it sounds like you have a couple there in the studio. And I also like to ask what they thought were the barriers to the United States public education system, in particular, becoming more bilingual, more multilingual in its curriculum offerings. I'll hang up and listen to the answer.
We'll take that, put that question to our friend from Cuba, Cuba-born. But first, let me remind our audience that this is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Barriers and challenges?
I went to high school here, so I took some ESL classes, English as a second language, and they were helpful. But then I had to go to American classes, regular classes, and that was difficult. I had one of my classmates pretty much translate the whole class. And the math classes were just fine because they're numbers. It's not like much language that you have to use. But it was difficult to do with, lunch and PE classes. It took probably like 6 months for me to actually go on and start speaking English. I was too afraid to say something wrong. But I got over it.
You know, the caller used the term courage. Do you feel courageous for having done and gone through what you've gone through?
Oh, every day. I have to be. I'm here. It takes a lot of courage to get up and go and fight the war, pretty much.
When you were taking your classes and studying about American history, for instance, or anything that you had learned, what did you find the most interesting or fascinating?
I love American history. It gives me like a second chance or a second view of what is really the American history, because Back in Cuba, they will tell me something, and here they will tell me something else. So it was good to hear both versions of the story, and I guess I will take the best of both worlds.
How much attention are you paying to this current political campaign? Did you watch the debate last night?
Yes, I did. Uh-huh. It was like a dogfight. I was embarrassed by it. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Really? Just elaborate on that for a moment. What was embarrassing?
I think they should have respected each other a little bit and respected the person that was actually running the interview. I think it was a little impolite. And, I mean, you're going to be the president of the United States, or you are the president of the United States. For God's sake, come on.
So you're disappointed in the way the candidates conducted themselves?
Yes.
Have you? I'm not going to ask you who your choice might be, but have you made up your mind yet with regard to whom you will vote for?
Yes, I have.
All right. And did you make it up last night, or was it made up long before?
Well, last night I don't think it was a good debate, but hopefully we'll get us another one. But yes, I have my mind made before that.
Okay, well, you'll be voting on November 6th.
Elena. Oh, yes.
And congratulations to you for having reached that point.
Thank you.
Anita, just to come back to you at the very end, what are people saying to you as they go to these classes about the campaign?
Similar to what Elena said. So much on television, teacher, so much, you know, so many ads, although it's taken a little bit of a break recently, but, you know, it'll get heated up again. So that's one of the issues that's going on. I think there's excitement, though. The buzz, the election buzz, people are paying attention. We get a publication at the Institute, which is a modified newspaper, and I'm sorry, I can't think of the name at the moment, and it summarizes the issues in a very clear way. So many of our advanced level students are able to participate in that way.
Well, it's great to hear that the newcomers are watching the process, enjoying the process, in some cases maybe a little disappointed by the process, but nonetheless becoming involved, because it's obviously an important right, maybe the most important right.
Mm-hmm.
Elena Fernandez, thank you so much for being with us. Again, congratulations to you and best of luck in your new homeland.
Thank you.
And Anita Barker, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
A reminder, by the way, we want folks to know that you can find more information about current election issues at beyondnovember.org, a collaboration of St. Louis Public Radio, the St. Louis Beacon, and the Nine Network of Public Media. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Paula Bradshaw, the Green Party candidate for Illinois' 12th District congressional seat, and with Jim Higgins, the Libertarian candidate for Missouri governor. And then we'll visit with the director and an athlete of a film documenting the story of five competitors in the National Senior Olympics. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.